Welcome to Bridging the Gap. We are Alaskans discussing issues that divide us in order to find solutions that will unite us. Welcome to Bridging the Gap. Today is the 11th in a series of panel discussions of Alaskans examining issues that divide us politically in these turbulent times. My name is Paul Thomas. I live in Trapper Creek. The objective of the panel discussion is to derive, through questions posed to the participants, an understanding of the causes that have resulted in the current polarization of American political discourse. Subsequent to achieving a satisfactory understanding of the causes, it is hoped that through further discussion, a strategy for positive interaction can be constructed, which can achieve a respectful accommodation of each side towards the other. Today we have an all-female panel, Lisa Boyles, Judy Getty, Pat Chesbro. Full disclosure here, this is the second in a row of our all-female panels, but for today, I actually asked four men as I was assembling the panel, and I was turned down. Maybe had to do something with that Valentine's Day or Ash Wednesday or something. Anyway, the topic for today is the Russian investigations. And the first question, was the hacking into the emails of Clinton campaign manager John Podesta a criminal act under U.S. law? Was it a criminal act? Was it okay for the Russians to do that?
I think there's a difference between a criminal act and okay. I don't think it was okay. I'm not sure it was a criminal. I don't think hacking is probably very good to do anyways, but they're hacking into a private system, and it's certainly not noble.
Well, Sarah Palin had that happen, and the person that did, who recently died, by the way, from MS, he was convicted. So there probably is some grounds, you know, of criminal grounds to hacking.
It's stealing, isn't it?
And we're talking about international law. So, I mean, I don't know what there is with regards to an international law that says it's illegal. But, you know, I guess I hear what you're saying, Lisa. And if it's not, it certainly should be. And at the same time, you know, Pat's point is that, you know, even if it's not illegal, there's still something there and we need to figure out what it is.
Was the distribution of these emails from Russian hackers to WikiLeaks prior to the election a function of a free press operating in a democracy, or would you characterize that as something else? Free press? We should need to know everything John Podesta was saying, or is that something else?
Well, if that question is posed, I think part of it goes to intent. So what was their intent? Do you think it was purely, the American people have a right to know? Or is this part of what we're looking at is this subterfuge and the collusion possibility, so that really their intent was to sway the election? And I think that's the question we're still trying to answer.
Yes, because I believe you would need a subpoena to go into my personal email. I mean, and even my cell phone, you know, my cell phone records, you need court permission. Now, again, this is international law, but I think you're right in the intent. You know, what information was coming out? Was this something that we as Americans had to fear for our personal safety? I mean, yes, that was just I don't want to go personal, but yeah, I think the intent is very important.
Well, the freedom of press also at least implies that there's some equitability here. And so they didn't release anything from the Republican National Committee. And, you know, obviously it was released in a way to damage the reputation of one of the candidates. So, again, it wasn't certainly not noteworthy. I mean, it's noteworthy, but it's not noble what they did. And they did it for a specific purpose, and that was to raise up Trump and lower the Democratic candidate.
And at WikiLeaks, as the vehicle by which it happened, also had that same intent. Is that what you're saying?
I think they did. They must have. They didn't leak anything else. They did very strategic leaking.
And I was looking at a news story this morning that now they're looking at some tweets of Julian Assange's that clearly, I mean, they're attributing it to him, but he's not, you know, and he's referring to himself in the third person, which I guess he tends to do. But that, you know, make it clear that the intention was to keep Hillary Clinton from winning the election.
Our Jolly on the Spot technician guy just handed me this, and I'm going to quote it here. Email hacking is one of the most common instances of cyber crime these days, and it is one of the most severely penalized. Depending on the circumstances of the offense, the nature of the charges in some jurisdictions, and the intent of prosecution, the unauthorized access of email accounts can be handled as a misdemeanor or a felony with additional civil liabilities. In other words, the penalties for hacking email accounts can be severe.
So that's federal law. Is that that what we found was federal law?
Alaska federal state law.
Okay.
But what about internationally? I mean, that's the other, you know, that's the tricky piece of this whole
thing. And I think that's where we go to the holding Russia accountable. So we know they've done that. And then where are the sanctions? And Paul, I'm sorry if I'm jumping the gun. We're going to get to that. Okay.
Okay. No bad thing happening here. The intelligence agencies informed President Obama that Russia was actively engaged in trying to sway the election, which resulted in sanctions and expelling Russian agents from their residences in the U.S. Was that enough? Is there anything more Obama should have done?
Now, this is where we open up to a larger issue. We really went fast with technology as far as social media goes, emails, all that kind of communication. Where our other, we always had protections for something, for the written word, slander, you know what I mean, things like that. So I think it's a really kind of gray as to what could have Obama have done. I don't know personally. I think as a nation, it really made us look, and probably as the world, with WikiLeaks to begin with, where do we draw the line? We need a whole different set of rules for this form of communication.
And that have yet to be developed.
That, exactly, because we're seeing the far-reaching, the bot calls that are we're getting warned again for the next election. You know, the just right along to Facebook, a very, you know, benign, what we thought was a benign communication device was very much abused and used during this election.
It's been reported that the memo that just came out for the Nunes memo, that the Russian bots had promoted the release of the memo. There was thousands and thousands. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was on Facebook or wherever, that release the memo, release the memo.
Right. The hashtag was part of the tweeting, hashtag release the memo.
So, Judy, did Obama do enough or?
You know, and I think he even did an interview where he said that, you know, in retrospect, maybe he felt that he had not. But at the time, the fear was that it would look like he was trying to sway the election himself. And so, I mean, what a tough spot to be in. And I think most of us looking back think we wish he would have done something more, certainly. I mean, even to now be saying that they weren't sharing some of their intelligence with Trump, I mean, you know, it's kind of frightening. I mean, they knew the danger there, but what could be done to, you know, to elevate it to a level where we would have looked more closely than at the election at large?
They had all that stuff on Flynn, and he was national security advisor, and they were afraid to tell him anything because of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. What about it, Pat? Could Obama have done more?
You know, again, I don't know what he would have. I don't know what he could have done more. And as you know, as been said, you know, if he put it out to everybody, we'd go. Well, they'd go. They would go. Well, see, he's just trying to sway it to Hillary, who he obviously supports. He's campaigned for her. Blah blah blah, and those kinds of things. So as Judy said, he was in a really bad kind of a situation as to not know what to do. But I understand that they told Trump too. He obviously didn't care because this was to his benefit. I don't know. I think I don't know what you do to a foreign country. I mean, what do they do to us when we interfere?
They burn us like effigies, I think they're called.
Yeah.
It's also been reported that anti-Hillary, pro-Trump ads were purchased on Facebook with rubles. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the money source which buys political advertising should be disclosed, or is it okay for that source to remain confidential?
Well, Citizens United says it can be anonymous, does it not? As long as you say, I'm not really supporting this candidate, I'm supporting this issue, but by the way, it's the same issue that this candidate believes in, and it is, you know, it is the law that allows that kind of thing to happen. So, I mean, I don't think it's more complicated with a foreign entity, but it seems like somebody might have said, huh, I wonder why this is going on.
So you agree with Citizens United then, or not?
No.
Okay. Just so we cleared that up. All right, Judy, what were you going to say?
Well, along the same lines. I mean, I think that, you know, we have a law in place that allows people to do it anonymously, but it would certainly be helpful if we knew that money was coming from certain sources so we know, you know, what's their end game. You can at least consider it then that what's, you know, they've got something in this game and they're trying to get something out of it.
And we have the old-fashioned laws, like you can't have a political sign a certain, you know, away from a voting area. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, you have to be, I think we need to kind of apply that to 20th century. You know what I mean? Maybe Facebook could say, you know, hey, yeah, this is freedom of speech, but you know what? It's an election year. We're going to, you know, and then again, that starts to get into that gray area of too much government. But, you know what I mean? Politically, we've seen the mess it can cause. Maybe it is time we look at more modern laws as far as infiltration and you know, trying to sway the vote, you know. I mean, it's an idea.
But part of the issue that we have, I'm afraid, is that we, you know, we've talked about this earlier, we're tribal, so we only tend to listen to the people that we agree with. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, and especially on social media. And the other part of it is, for whatever reason, and I could go back and say, I think it has to do with the fact that we have trivialized education to the point that people cannot separate the chaff from the wheat, that they don't know what's propaganda. They don't look at those words that are obvious propaganda words and say, that is blah, blah, blah. And I think that's another issue. I think we're not very critical consumers of our media as well.
It's a great segue into the next show, which is going to be about historical parallels, propaganda, and how that is addressed. Judy? Oh, yeah, you done. We're done with that question?
Yeah.
This is Bridging the Gap on KVRF Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, 89.7 on your radio dial in Palmer and Wasilla, 89.5 in the Sutton area, 91.5 Glacier View. We are discussing one of the many issues that divides us politically. We are Alaskans seeking solutions to those issues through examination and dialogue. Today we are talking about the Russian investigations. Now, there are three investigations going on. There's the Mueller special counsel investigation. There's the House investigation. We can characterize that as something besides investigation when we get to talk about it. And then there's the Senate investigation. When a Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein wrote the memo which cited the reasons to fire FBI Director Comey, he cited the way Comey essentially treated candidate Clinton for publicly chastising her and announcing just prior to the election that not all the emails had been reviewed, that there were more found on the laptop of Anthony Weiner's wife, Yuma Abedin, a Clinton campaign staffer. Within days after the release of the memo, President Trump dismisses those reasons and tells Lester Holt and the nationally televised audience that he fired Comey because of the Russian thing. Everybody see that? Lester Holt. Okay. Does the confession we saw during the Lester Holt interview last May rise to the level of obstruction of justice?
And I think it's just a news story that's out today that Adam Schiff, who's on the House Intelligence Committee, is saying that he thinks, and he's a former prosecutor, that he thinks there's enough evidence there to make a case. But he said it's, you know, obviously going to be up to Mueller if it's beyond a reasonable doubt. But, you know, I think a lot of us who are consumers of media that maybe have, we hope, good critical thinking skills are saying, oh, gosh, why don't they, you know, charge him? And so I think there's a lot of people already seeing it. But, I admire Schiff for saying it's up to Mueller who will make the case.
Because constitutionally, what the House does is that puts up articles of impeachment. The Senate then, under the jurisdiction of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, would have the trial, which would convict, and then that would result in the removal. So basically what the debate is about that is whether we can or cannot indict a sitting president because the Constitution has it set up that way.
Well, Eric Holder, he said that it really hasn't been challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that says you absolutely cannot, but it's just never happened.
Right.
So what they bring up is not criminal charges, though. It's articles of impeachment, which is different from criminal charges. And so what I don't know. What would be the category for impeachment? I mean, obviously, misusing your power as president to try to obstruct justice seems like it would be an impeachable offense, exceeding your power.
Well, the phrase they have in the Constitution is high crimes and misdemeanors.
Well, that's pretty high.
Is it obstruction of justice? Lisa? In your belief.
In my belief, I have to tell you, yes. I really, and I think based on his infallibility, his belief that he is who he is and he can do whatever he wants. I mean, it really, we were just discussing this earlier, coming in and believing he just do whatever he wants and he's not accountable for anything and the past doesn't matter, even if it was yesterday or this morning. And and the Russian thing, the way he refers to it as the Russian thing. Yeah, he sees it as outside of him. You know, and so, yeah, I believe, but I got to be quiet because I might go too far. Some of my beliefs.
Well, we're here to examine the issues. When the story broke of the Trump Tower meeting with Don Jr., Jared Kushner, and Paul Manafort, and the Russian operatives to provide dirt on Hillary Clinton, President Trump was in Europe. That's when the story broke. He was in Europe at a NATO conference. On the flight back, he dictated a missive which declared that the meeting was only about adoptions. Was this an attempt by the president to redirect the issue away from the truth? And does that represent an example of obstruction?
He redirects all of the time. And to me, that is just outright lying. I mean, he's telling them to lie. He's saying this is the way it is and then we're going to lie about it. I think that is obstruction of justice. Obviously, he's trying to set it up so there's no fairness in the process.
Yes.
That's obstruction.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That he wants us to think there's nothing there.
Yeah.
We're making it up. It's delegitimizing the media and everything is wrong and everybody – the FBI is now bad. The CIA, everybody's bad except for him.
Well, all the intelligence agencies that identified the Russian interference with the election were wrong.
Well, I just can't believe I have to believe because we saw it. But his lack of integrity of even allowing such a meeting, that to me – even I'm not a fan of Steve Bannon, but that was one of the things he said, according to Michael Wolff in that book, was that – and he actually said it in the interview. Were there any lawyers present? I mean,
there was a Russian lawyer present.
Yeah. Yeah. If this comes out, this is not good. And he even knew, I mean, but again, he's
well,
not accountable.
Part of the argument was that, these are neophytes. These are people who don't know how politics work. And so to be contacted by a foreign government and, with that kind of a message or a hook, we have dirt on Hillary Clinton, most people would know, oh, my gosh, I should probably let my government know. I should, contact the FBI and tell them that they're, gathering information on one of our citizens. None of them did that.
There are essentially three separate investigations taking place simultaneously. The Senate Committee, the House of Representatives Committee, and Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who was appointed by Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein in the wake of the firing of James Comey by President Trump. I want you to compare and contrast these three investigations from what you know about them.
Yeah, on some level, I thought, really, don't we overdo it with three investigations? I mean, people go in and they have to tell their story three different times. And so one thing that was helpful to me to think about was the idea that with the House and the Senate investigations, I mean, because these should be more open forums and some of them have been, you know, televised. Some are, you know, classified and we don't see that those interviews. But that's the way the American public, I think, gets more information.
From Congress.
From yes. And, of course, the House has, I think, with Nunes, they've compromised their credibility. But what Mueller's doing, I think, is a high-level criminal investigation. And I think that takes on a different tone and a different level, and it's more secretive.
Level? What do you mean level? Is it more important,
outcome,
less important?
Yeah, I think that the outcome could be farther reaching.
And a lot of the information has to remain
confidential.
It's not out for public.
There don't seem to be many leaks coming out of Mueller's investigation.
No, not at all. And he's assembled, according to what I read, a very competent team of people to work, very professional. And that's the concern I have with the Senate and the House. I would like to think they're unbiased. I would like to think they're professional. But we just see over and over again that they're blocking things that might tell the whole story or the other side of the story. And we're spending a lot of money doing that, just like we always do with a lot of things. And I don't know what it's going to do in the end to help us. I just don't have any faith in Congress anymore to not be so biased that nothing. I mean, I don't have any faith that they'll be unbiased, I guess.
It's so incredibly unfortunate and sad to think that they've lost the sense of what's good for the country.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
What do you think about Nunes?
I don't think I can say that on the radio.
No.
I don't know what he's grabbing for. I don't know if he thinks that, you know, Trump will reward him in some way. What's his end game? What is he going to get out of this? Because he's just looking like an idiot, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, how about the fact that he was recused and somehow crawled his way back into the chairmanship?
They don't even follow their rules. Yeah.
So what about Paul Ryan? What's Paul Ryan's role in this then?
Just to keep smiling.
I think he's so sleazy that his intention is to get what he wants through Congress. And he thinks that he can do that with Trump as the president.
With Trump behind him. So he's willing to allow Nunes roughshod
he'll look
over.
The other way, I think.
And I think we're seeing that with a lot of Congress and a lot of just what's going on, like with the EPA. I mean, they're shoving as much through as quickly as possible just for representing few groups. Few lobbyists or whatever you want, a specific group.
We'll call them Trump supporters.
Corporations. And because I know it's not going to end well. And right now, like I think you said, Ryan's willing to look the other way because his own agenda is getting pushed through.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's so partisan, though.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
Everything is so partisan and so, as you said, doesn't have anything to do with the has nothing to do with the good of the country or the people in this nation. It has to do with political. And I have to believe there's a really, I could say cabal, but I don't know what's behind it. I feel like they're all in such fear for their job, their reputation, their reelection, that they don't dare do anything except what they're told. And I don't know who's telling them. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
Or Alec.
Or if there's somebody else out there telling them what to do and threatening them in whatever way, whatever's important to them, like, oh, well, when you get done, I'm not going to hire you as a big lobbyist and give you lots of money. I don't know. But to me, it's just really suspicious that they're so afraid to stand up for themselves.
Well, in Pence's case, it's the Lord.
The Lord's telling him.
Telling him.
Not
yes.
to go with those weird
well,
women.
Well, isn't it really their base, the base that believes that they need to follow everything Trump tells them to do?
I believe it's not that. I think somebody's telling the base what they're supposed to believe.
Well, that would be Trump, right? Trump's telling the base what to believe?
No, this has been an evolutionary thing. This has been the Koch brothers. This has been the creation of the Tea Party. I mean, if you really dig deep, you know, it started a while ago, and it's just getting bigger and more normal. So it's okay to accept, like she said, they're not looking and saying, you're not representing me. You're not, you're not looking out for the best of us. You're looking out the best of you or what you need, or again, who's telling you what to do.
It's that analysis of, you know, when they look at people who, you know, even people who voted for Trump that voted against their own best interests.
Yes.
And, you know, so the political maneuvering behind that, you know, what do you offer people to vote against their own best interests? And, you know, some of the things that I've read, and they talk about, you know, it's almost like this exchange. And so if you can really whip up that emotional or fear level of people, and here's what's going to happen if you don't vote for this candidate, you know, that's part of it. But also the trade-off. And so certainly magnet cases or magnet issues like abortion, you know, if they can guarantee that they're anti-abortion, then they'll take the, oh, we're going to lose our Medicaid and we're going to lose, you know, all this other stuff. But, you know, the magnet issue, we'll get that.
And also, I think a lot of times, going back to Facebook, put on such a basic level, they don't see the trade-off. They'll just focus on that one issue, not looking and seeing what else. I mean, we saw a lot of that happen with Obamacare. Oh, we thought he was just talking about, that was just a political thing. And this was in the Midwest and down around like Arkansas, Missouri, some of the poor states. And they were panicked thinking they were seriously going to lose their Obama, ACA. And they just believed it was a political talk, that he just had to do that to get elected because he's going to bring jobs. And yeah, so it's interesting, yes. Because they focused on these small issues and kind of swept the other stuff, which really was the Tea Party itself. Ever have a party that got a lot of people rallying against issues that, I mean, services that they would need? It was it's an irony if you look at that.
Well, and it's so interesting that the big thing was jobs, 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 the economy. And you know, when we'd been seeing 8 years of an improved economy, and so it wasn't like Trump could come in and rescue all of us. So, you know, but they sold it on jobs, 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 too.
Not in Alaska.
No.
We don't have an improved economy in Alaska. Yet Trump still won Alaska.
Yeah, well.
We've got other stuff going on.
So anything more we want to add about the three separate investigations for the Senate investigation? Is that even worth mentioning? Are they doing anything that we need to mention or talk about?
I felt at the beginning the Senate people were much more balanced than the House people. I mean, the two, you know, the Republican and the Democrat were together talking about it, trying to. And so they haven't done the flare-ups that the House has done, certainly, to try to circumvent or subvert the process or whatever. What if they all come to different conclusions, I wonder? What happens then? Is it? I don't know.
Conclusions along party lines? Is that what you're referring to?
I don't know. Yeah. Or what if they don't? What if the Senate comes up with, yes, this was obstruction of justice or this was an impeachable offense, and the House doesn't? And because the House has to bring the impeachment proceedings, right? And then the Senate would be, I don't know. I wish I had faith.
And that's an interesting point, because that's where you see the disarray is in Congress. And you do see these crazy little squirrels and shiny things coming up and diversion, 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 you know, not to get away from what, you know, like you said, the investigation, the whole, you know, the core of the investigation. So I'm with you. Yeah.
Speaking of diversions, what about the dueling memos? Are they significant, or are they just something that is in a news cycle? Well, I guess the current news cycle has been taken over by the Porter thing. But prior to that, we had the dueling memos, which Trump said he was, without even reading the Republican version, he released it to the public. But after careful consideration, chose not to release Schiff's memo. Anything?
Are we surprised?
Well, I read a little bit about it, and the reasoning was there was too much redactions based on security concerns for the Democratic memo.
But it was okay to say whatever.
And if you read the Nunes memo, it really didn't say much. And it was, you know, it just kind of kept pointing back to Hillary. We need to investigate Hillary.
Diversion.
Yes. Yeah, so that's kind of diversion. That's pretty much it. Yep. And for him to even be involved in that after recusing himself. Yeah. So, yeah, the Congress doesn't have a clue right now as a whole.
I think it's, again, unfortunate and really appalling that the intelligence community came forward and said, do not release the memo. And, you know, other people in Congress who said this is going to jeopardize our ability to get information from the intelligence community. And they did it. And, you know, now the news reports are saying it was a big nothing with, you know, some misinformation included. But so that was worth, you know, destroying the relationship of Congress and the intelligence community. I just, you know, again, it's sickening.
Well, go ahead, Pat.
He's delegitimizing the media, but also the intelligence community. And they're saying now that we need to be careful in 2018. The Russians haven't stopped. They're going to keep – they're keeping doing this kind of thing. They have ways of – you know, they're trying to influence the next election. They don't want people that think for themselves to be in these jobs. They want to interfere. And we haven't done anything to keep them from interfering, apparently. And if we don't believe the intelligence agent, who the heck are we supposed to believe? Trump.
Yeah. Well, I liked McCain's response to the memo. He said that, you know, Trump is doing Putin's job for him. So
what are you showing us over there, Lisa?
Oh, it was just in the Washington Post. It was an article yesterday. The nation's top spy said Russia is continuing to target the U.S. political system and talking about 18 and how nothing's the bots with the release the memo. I mean, they're still very active in the social media area. And unfortunately, that does hit a lot of Trump's base, because if you know, I just did my own little experimentation during this last election and just listening to people's comments. Most of these people were getting their information from Facebook. Like you said, they weren't differentiating between fake news. They didn't care. One-liners, you know, that's how they would grab. And it was startling to see the level of belief that people I thought were fairly intelligent, you know, just falling into this trap. And they found a little wormhole that they're definitely going to take advantage of.
So one of the things that I found, and this is actually an old article, but they said that there were four avenues that the Russians used to wage war on our system. First, establishing personal contact with Americans perceived who supported them, like Michael Flynn and those kinds of people. So Paul Manafort. Second was hacking the Democrats. Third was to amplify the propaganda value of things and make Hillary look weak and, you know, indecisive and a crook and all that
Facebook
kind of stuff.
Facebook was a primary vehicle for that.
And then the fourth was to breach. This was, and I hadn't thought about this before, breach U.S. voting systems in as many as 39 states leading up to the election in an effort to steal registration data that officials say could be used to target and manipulate voters in future elections. So here we are in 2018. They have hacked or they have interfered with voter registration, and they are specifically targeting people that they think they can manipulate with their things that they're still doing. So it's a kind of
and I think that's
those would be scary thing.
The registered Republicans as opposed to the registered Democrats.
Well, the independence parties, you know, the people that are the American Independence Party and plus, you know, those voter systems, if you go into the Democrat one, I know they have lots of information in some of those voter systems. How often do you vote? What kinds of things when you answer surveys? I mean, if you can get into that kind of stuff, you can really find out a lot about people.
And that's going back to what we said, us not keeping ahead of this new communication. And, you know, once you say I agree to any kind of app or anything like that, and a lot of people will answer these kind of questions just innocently and not realizing this is all collected. This becomes algorithms and used for various different venues.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And
they know what we're looking at. We all know that. If you pull up any web page and what you have on the side, it's sites you visited or things you've shown an interest in. And so they're watching.
I tried to buy a part for my lawnmower. I had to order it from Craftsman, and it seemed like for the last 6 months since I tried to order that part, every time I turn my computer on, this part comes up. They're trying to sell me this part again. So, yeah, that's the algorithm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Russian investigation on Bridging the Gap with Lisa Boyles, Judy Getty, and Pat Chesbrough, trying to come to some understanding as to what's going on. If the Mueller report of his investigation concludes that Donald Trump actively and knowingly engaged in criminal activity, do you believe that the Republican House would impeach and the Republican Senate give 67 votes to convict President Trump, removing him from office? I'm asking you to peer into the future based on a hypothetical that Mueller comes up with actual criminal activity in his report to Congress. Do you believe the Republicans would do what they did with Clinton?
He lied.
I'm going to kind of reflect back to what Pat said. I don't trust that they would. And I think when you look at polling, 90% of Republicans still support Trump. And so they're, you know, so I don't see where Republicans would feel that their base would hold them accountable. I think this is so different from Watergate, when the whole country was so, you know, engaged in this process of what's good for the country and what's good for the people, and the pressure was there, you know, to investigate and then for Nixon to step down. We just don't have those elements now, I don't believe.
Unless we look at since Trump, we've seen way more parades, not
the parades, resistance.
Marches, the resistance, exactly. Okay. Marches, the word's getting out. I think as a nation, we need to come together again to say, you know, this is what we want. We don't know what will happen in Congress, but I think we need us as Americans. So it's going to be hard. You know,
the blue wave is what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's going to have to be, we're going to have, you know, get more vocal, I guess, and try to get that because, yeah, these, you know, we're not on Facebook all the time. Yeah.
We need to vote. I mean, we need to get people to run,
yes,
and we need to vote for them. I mean, we need to be able to somehow combat this misinformation that goes out all the time with information that's going to convince people that they are being conned, mm-hmm, and those kinds of things. The other part of it, and this was, I was listening to the radio once and they were talking about this. There's also another avenue that they may not be able to indict him. But they they might be able to indict him in the state of New York. They said that there's different state laws
different
are a little bit different,
right.
And so maybe they might be able to do that. And this person was guessing that Mueller was leaving that option open, that the Attorney General of New York could bring charges based on some of this information. So it's a I think he's a pretty smart guy.
Wow,
one of the things that they were talking about that was to try to defang Trump's ability to pardon everybody, because if he would pardon them for the federal offense, if they would be charged with a state offense, he doesn't have the power to pardon that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I interrupted you, Lisa. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was agreeing with Pat. Yeah, and I was glad to hear that.
Yeah, it would be really.
I hear a lot of talking heads on TV wonder why Mr. Trump is taking such an active role regarding these investigations when his claims of innocence would be revealed by legitimate investigations. Could it be that he is actually guilty and that these interferences are the acts of a desperate criminal trying to avoid prosecution? Ooh,
and
silence.
I just think he's a showman.
I was going to say, you're using nice words. I was just going to say, he's not really bright.
he's on television. He's, you know, the way, just the language he uses, he thinks he's getting ratings. He's got a big announcement on Wednesday. He's going to, you know, it's like coming attractions. I can't say he doesn't understand. He acts like he's still in show business.
His manipulation has gotten him this far in his life. I mean, this is what he's accustomed to doing. I mean, we don't even know if he's as rich as he says he is. I mean, we don't know anything about him, really, except what he says. And he's so good at this diverting and, you know, all those kinds of things and trolling. They were talking about that the other day, too, trolling that he then, well, it's like lock her up. I mean, he diverts to something that has nothing to do with what's going on by criticizing someone or pointing out this or pointing out that. He's so good at that, and it's worked so well his whole life. I think he believes it's going to work.
I do too. I lived in New England when he in the 80s, and I had friends in New York City, and I always love to tell people the story of he was never fully accepted by the elite in New York, and he kind of lowered the status of a party if he showed up. I mean, it was to that, you know, we called him like the Andy Dick of, you know, of New York City. And I think that like Pat's right, the people that believed him were the ones with that, like the bling and like the, you know, and he's been, but he's playing in ground he's not familiar with. And I think that's the scary part, his lack of understanding the Constitution, of understanding how our government works, is really, I think it's going to come back to bite him, and pretty shortly.
But if he didn't collude, and he claims multiple times in the same breath that he didn't collude, there is no collusion, then why not just try to cooperate, get this thing taken care of, and be done with it?
I think the other example is like the stories that came out recently about the porn stars. I think this all feeds into his narrative that this is a witch hunt, that they're out to get me. So he can use all of that as ammunition that, you know, see how they're picking on me.
So he's using this investigation by characterizing as a witch hunt to enhance his political base. Is that what you're saying?
I think that would be his psychology, that, you know, that people feel sorry for him then, that here's this guy, he just wants to do a good job and, you know, get their taxes lowered. And, you know, then he's got that other, you know, this is what I'm doing for you line. And look at how they're treating me.
I mean, a good example was Kellyanne. And when they were talking about, something about the Me Too movement and she came back with, but look at, he's created 800,000 jobs for women. I mean, it was just so beyond. And yeah, that's right. We should all get raped at work, but you've got a job, you know.
You get paid extra for
you
that.
Get paid
I don't
extra.
Know.
Talk to Stormy.
Yeah. 130,000.
She undersold.
I think she did too.
Yeah.
Well, his lawyer just came out today. Said he came out of his own pocket.
The lawyer's pocket.
The lawyer's pocket. Yeah. Yeah. That makes it okay.
Well, right.
It wasn't campaign money.
Or tax dollars.
Or the foundation from the picture. You know, the 6-foot picture that he had of himself.
Does Donald Trump have the ability to both take the oath to tell the truth and avoid perjury? Can he do that? Can he say, I swear to tell the truth and avoid perjury?
I don't know. Again, I think his whole life he has done this manipulation of everything to the point where he thinks that's – and people have not stopped him, apparently.
Yes.
I don't know if he's actually lying or he's just – he's just so used to making stuff up to suit himself. I mean, I don't know. He obviously doesn't tell the truth. Whether he does it intentionally or just because that's the way he is, I don't know.
My money is on his attorneys won't let him testify under oath. Totally. Even his attorneys are concerned he'll perjure himself.
Well, because he's known to go off script. There's never a script. He'll throw it out the window, and he does. He's like just that, you know. It's the Russian thing.
You know? Well, even when he teleprompters, he is so slow in his delivery. And then when he makes those mistakes, it's so hilarious how he covers up those mistakes.
Like he intended to say it.
Yeah. Like we used to call the guy DJ and CJ. We like to call him CJ.
Yeah. He said either one is okay, but we'll call him CJ.
He's okay, yeah.
Okay,
this is going back to what we talked about a little earlier.
Sad.
Is it reasonable to conclude that the Republican congressional and media efforts to undermine the Russian investigations, because we've seen a lot of that, in U.S. election tampering, that the Republicans endorse Russian involvement because Russia helps Republicans win? Ooh. Let's see a little frightening look on your face there, Judy.
Well, that's,
do the Russians' involvement in these elections help Republicans?
I think they'd complain a lot more if it was helping Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that what we've seen in many states with Republican efforts to disenfranchise voters, I think it fits their game plan. And so it's sort of like, this is working for us. So why would they question it or want to really reveal it? It's
the only thing I remember thinking is his policies are so bad. And what he's doing, as everything's getting pushed through and pushed through and pushed through, a lot of his base, again, I brought up ACA, hate to call it Obamacare, and all of a sudden people are panicking because this was something he meant. So I'm wondering if his base is going to start to fall apart as time goes by and the jobs he promises don't come through and the things that phony stuff that he threw, because he's going to he's the new savior as far as he was concerned because he's huge. Just that his base is going to start to fall apart. That's what I'm kind of seeing. I'm thinking and hoping, as this drags out and we're seeing the repercussions of some of these things he's doing to better our lives or make America great again.
But you're expecting people to be rational about this. And I'm not sure rationality is all going to just, woohoo, we're all rational now. I mean, I think that makes sense. But the things I read about why people voted for him and those kinds of things mm-hmm. had nothing to do with rationality.
What are those things, the reasons?
Because of the whole emotional language thing. When you say make America great, I can construct that in any way in the world. And if I tell you that you're poor, you're this, after a while you're going to believe it. If we keep saying that the intelligence community is bad, that the media is bad, we're going to believe it. So then you can say whatever you want because you are the font of knowledge. I mean, it's emotionalism. It's not rationality.
That's true.
And the other ploy is the horizontal hostility. And so if you're the white blue-collar worker, who can you blame for not getting ahead? The immigrant. And so you don't blame, the politicians. You blame somebody, somewhere else on your social strata, and they're the problem. And now when I start talking about we need immigration reform to get rid of these people who are taking your jobs, you're like, that is so true.
And I did get a call last night from, and I didn't get the polling place because it came up USA, and that's exactly what it was geared toward. They were trying to equate DACA, the Dreamers Act, with them, and now their families are going to come in, and there you go, 1 million jobs gone immediately. It was so, and I just looked at the woman, I said, I do not agree with anything you're saying, and do not call my house again. And, it was just.
And they were pulling you, they were calling you to get.
To see how I felt about that.
Oh. Yeah. Push pull?
Yes, a push pull, definitely. And it's scary because it went from, there was no strategy. It was just
you had to really listen.
You had to
what you were saying.
Because at the end, you just heard, and all the jobs will be taken. Yes. So it was pretty scary because I could see someone I look at my children. My son, who's not that informed because he hears the blah 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 from his mother, so he tunes it out. But if he was to get that kind of a call at 21, and wow, really,
job could be gone.
And of course,
the reality is the DACA. The Dreamers were people that were brought here by their parents. They're not doing this chain. I mean, they're conflating two issues that are different.
Exactly. Yep.
Chain migration. My brother and I were talking about that, and we said another name for chain migration is tearing families apart.
Yeah.
basically. Yeah.
And they said, see, that's that language again. So, you know, that by using that word, it just conjures up something. And it really, it's, you know, family migration.
Well, getting your family to come. Mm-hmm. Now, I was looking at my grandfather's stuff who came, you know, he came from Ireland. Okay. So his sister had come. And then he came. He went back and got another sister. He went back and got another brother. I mean, you know, this is what they're talking about. But the rules were different then.
And
the
also,
rules were different.
The majority, like, was I'm half Italian and half Irish. A little bit of other stuff, I'm sure, mixed in. But the bulk of it, they were all hard workers. I mean, they came here and they worked and they, you know what I mean? It was... You know, so it's a little different than what they're trying to make it sound like. They come in and rely on our system and it not only taking jobs, but going on welfare or, you know what I mean?
Which they can't do.
I know, but I've heard
sorry,
that,
Paul,
too.
Sorry, Paul, we got off on immigration.
Sorry.
We should go back to the Russian investigation.
It's all good.
Okay.
There have been 8 separate incidents where high-level contacts between Trump and Putin, or the KGB and American intelligence chiefs, 8 separate incidents that we learned about from Russian press releases. It feels like Putin is bragging to the Russian people about things that Trump is trying to keep on the QT. Should that be an element to consider among these investigative teams?
And again, this is, I think it's so interesting to think about the psychology of Putin, because it's sort of like it just rubs our face in it, how much he's really pulling the strings here. Because you would think that he wouldn't want it to get out either, because if he's got these sort of back channel ways of dealing with our government, that he'd want to keep those. But he lets the American people know. I know he's rubbing our face in it.
And not to mention how many times we've had those Russian planes close to Alaska. And at first they said, oh, it happens a lot. Well, wait, what's happening a little bit more than normal, you know? Wait, it was 5 times in 1 month, you know? I don't know. I'm just, you know, throwing the number out. So, but pretty much that kind of rubbing in, I wonder, like, what are you trying to say with that? Should we be afraid of you? You know, that you really aren't, you know? So not only, you know.
No, because we're not going to do anything.
Yeah, we're not.
Well, we are, no, we are, he's portraying us as weak. Weak nation.
Exactly.
He wants to be the strong nation. He didn't want us to be the strong nation. And Trump's doing, in my opinion, a really good job of making us look like idiots and making us weaker by this. He has no policies. I mean, I don't think he has policies. I think he has whims and he has tweets. And I think that people tell him things and he says, well, let's do it that way. And, you know, I don't think he has policies. But I think Putin loves the fact that he is looking like the strong leader now, and we're looking like a bunch of whatevers we are. Lemmings, I don't know, going over the edge. But he wants to be more power. Of course he doesn't want to be treated like an underling. You know, Obama was so respected around the world. It helped America. So all that is being destroyed now by this, and that Putin loves that.
Not to mention democracy as a whole. Yeah, we've seen a lot of capitalism. We've seen a lot of different, you know, it's kind of evolved from the ideas our forefathers had. But this is the worst, I feel, in my generation, I've seen. And, the lack of respect for democracy that's being,
So Putin's number one and Trump is lower on the hierarchy?
I think that's the way it's working.
Okay. By overwhelming margins, Congress passed sanctions against Russia for meddling in our elections. I think it was 97-2 or something like that in the Senate. President Trump signed the veto-proof bill into law. Those sanctions were scheduled to take effect weeks ago, but the Trump administration has yet to implement them. Does this represent a quid pro quo to Putin for helping get Trump elected?
That's how it looks.
Yeah.
But my question is, too, whose job is it to implement? And why isn't anybody following up? Did that person fall asleep? Did they quit?
Fired.
Constitutionally, the executive is to enforce the laws that are passed by Congress. Yes. So it's
administration.
It's the president.
But he's not going to do anything. He can't even read a 3-page memo. So somebody has to actually, okay, we're going to make this happen. Who's supposed to?
There is a sanctions department. There is a department.
Does nobody work there?
Probably no one has clearance.
We can't read the, what the
probably,
sanctions
probably
are.
They hired people that have no background at yeah, all, exactly. And they don't know the spell sanctions, so they can't do it. I don't know.
Last question. A red line has been drawn by Trump, which basically states that his financial dealings are off limits from this investigation. Are these financial dealings off limits? Do you think that they have a legitimate reason to look into the financial dealings, particularly what happened with Russia?
Everything is about money for Trump. He, you know, you talked earlier about the fact that he wasn't respected by the people that considered themselves classier people. Mm-hmm. And look at his apartment, for heaven's sakes, with all that gold stuff. But I think that's exactly what's going on.
Follow the money.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And right now, I know we only have a little bit of time, but just what's happening with his hotels. I mean, there's so much that we need to question. So if we're going to do it on a basic level right in front of our face, can you imagine what he's doing behind us?
That's right.
So you think Mueller's going there?
Oh, I definitely think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. He's looking at the
follow
money.
Follow the money.
All right, ladies, if I can call you ladies, thank you so much for coming by today. Lisa Boyles, Judy Getty, Pat Chesbro. This is Bridging the Gap. I'm Paul Thomas. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Bridging the Gap. We welcome diversified perspectives. If you are interested in becoming a panelist for a future show, send us an email to manager@radiofreepalmer.org.
This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters.